Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Beans. Don't come round here for beans. Beans. Don't come round here for beans. You want beans? Don't come round here for beans. You want beans? Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
Mm-hmm. I'm Alistair.
And I am Andy. You remain Andy. Mate,
I wonder if there'll be a twist at the end.
Me away from me, the remainder would still be me. That's how much me I am. I remain.
What is there a number like that? That if you take
zero,
I guess. One.
One? No, well, if you took one away from one, one of the notable factors of that would be that it's no longer one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But what if you, I was thinking of dividing it by itself.
Sure. And in a way, do you think that subtracting and dividing are basically the same thing? I mean, I can't guarantee that they are, but they feel very similar.
Is there a simple operation in a computer for dividing? It feels like there's no direct way of doing it that is simple.
what do you mean?
Like when you think about dividing in your mind, don't you have to do like a thing where you go, because you know, like you've done long division, that's not direct.
It's a massive pain in the ass. I see what you're asking me. Yes. I thought you were asking, is there a thing in a computer like a calculator that you can use? Is there a symbol for division that you can press and then it does division? But you mean on a computational level, is there an algorithm that allows for a computer to perform division in such a way that it's not this bizarre sort of backwards multiplication thing with a bit of addition and subtraction thrown in?
Yeah, like I know this doesn't sound like a sketch right now.
No, but...
but, like, what is the operation for divide? Is it... Okay, so let's say it's 30 divided by 3, right? Does it go... all right, minus 30 minus 3...
God, minus I hope not.
3, minus 3, minus 3, minus 3 until it gets to 0. And then it counts. And then as it goes down, it counts how many that it did until that operation is equal to 0 or less.
Counting
the number of them?
It's a great question. And I'd encourage all computer scientists to write in. By hand, write us a letter, please.
Because, we might know some boutique calculator designers. Because, that's the thing, is that a calculator doesn't look like it would have complex programming in it.
No, but it must be in there somehow.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
There must be a simple thing, because I think that's missing from my brain.
We have long division. Why is there just a regular division? Like, what is that?
Yeah, where's just division? Why are we being taught the long version?
I'll just have division, thanks.
It's like if school, you're in geography and they go, all right, we're going to teach you the distance between Sydney and Melbourne. Now, here's the long distance.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, cool, what's the other ones? You go... You're not going to find out what the other ones are.
We don't tell you
that. It's going to be roughly 20 years are going to go by before you're doing a podcast that's supposed to be funny. And you're going to bring this up and you're going to go, they never taught us the normal distance between Sydney and Melbourne.
There is a tedious version for everything that you could get taught in school. It sounds like there is a shorter version of division, but they needed to pad some time in the maths curriculum. And they said, well, what if we just found a long way to do division? That would fill a few weeks and confuse some students. And then they penciled in the name long division because they were going to come up with a marketing buzzword name for it. But then it got to the day and they were just like, nah, it was too late. They forgot to change it, or they were like, yeah, let's just leave it at that. Just leave it as a long division.
If it was teachers who were like, look, our workload is too big.
Yes.
Our workload, I got to tell you, I'm going to say it's quite sizable. And so what we're going to do is we're going to invent the concept of long division. And that will allow us, you see, write that down. You could say, let's say we're going to spend on the curriculum 6 months teaching this.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard for some high up in the sort of Department of Education bureaucracy for someone to go look at it and go, well, that won't take 6 months because it's right there in the name.
Yeah. Yep. They can't argue with that time that you're asking for. And I tell you what also is good about teaching the kids a really hard way to do it is the teachers all know the really easy way to do it. Right. And that means that they can, when they're checking the work, they know the answers really, really quickly. They know them. Regular division, which they don't want anybody to know. The teachers hate teachers. This guy found one weird trick for division. Teachers hate him. Teachers don't want you to know this. And it's so quick. It's quicker than addition. It's the easiest thing there is. But they needed to pad things out, and they want to look clever. They want to look clever, and they can't do long division. They don't know how, but they can check the answers really, really quickly, and it makes them look smart.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And there's almost a full documentary in this. Where's regular division? Where is it?
Yeah.
Doesn't this feel like something that should have been passed to us from, the Arab countries back in like 1506 or something like that?
What were the Arab countries doing?
Advanced mathematics.
Maybe the Arab countries all know it as well, and they're holding something back. They thought it was they thought that when they were giving us all the mathematics, yeah. Ibn al-Sayyam. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, some cool guy, some amazing mathematician. They were giving us all it, but they were like, "Don't give them everything. Don't give them everything." Hold back the secret of division, and then in 1,000 years' time, when computers and calculators have been invented and it's irrelevant, then we'll come out with it.
So are you saying, Andy?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. I hope it's not racist.
Are you saying that all of the math teachers are in cahoots with the Arab nations?
That is exactly what I'm saying, yes.
To stop us from finding out regular division.
Big maths, and it's the
big maths, and that's mostly
cradle of civilization.
Where they multiply numbers with three numbers or more.
Big maths, correct. That's where all of this comes in handy. Is this a sort of a more like a kind of like a plandemic, like paranoid conspiracy documentary video type sketch? Is that what it is?
Well, I think the long division scam is maybe is a sketch itself. But I think, maybe a plandemic style doco on Where's Division?
Yep. Terrific.
Plan division.
I think you could just call it division. You could call it the Great Divide. You could call it Divide and Conquer. You could call it something else, and it would go viral. Because as soon as you put the label that people don't want you to know something on something, suddenly everybody wants to know that thing.
Do you think, I mean, it's actually a really good way of getting a lot of alt-right people to learn mathematics by telling them that the Arab nations don't want them to know how to divide things.
Yeah, exactly. The elites. I tell my, this is how I get my kids to eat their breakfast, actually. I tell them that the elites don't want them to eat their breakfast.
That's so really good, yeah.
Your kids
are really right-wing.
They are now, yeah.
They're really right-wing, and I noticed that I could teach him to do anything by telling him it was something that George Soros didn't want you to know.
It turns out that the techniques that the alt-right uses to radicalize and motivate these, you know, fervent conspiracy, anti-government, anti-intellectual kind of masses, they work so well that it would be crazy not to adapt them for parenting. And so I've developed a new alt parenting technique.
Yeah.
Well,
that's good. And the only different thing that you have to do to your kids that might be detrimental in here, while it makes your parenting a lot easier, the only detrimental thing is you have to make your kids extremely right wing.
Yeah. Yeah. But also the other thing that I'm doing is I'm making them extremely physically weak. So they'll be unable to enact any form of violence. And
that's the perfect balance
have to strike. Yep, you know, as a parent.
You know, Hitler wouldn't have been able to do what he could if he had been super muscly and strong.
That's right. Oh, imagine muscly Hitler. Ripped Hitler. Sexy.
Do you think
Hitler.
He would have been? Do you think if he was muscly, super muscly, do you think he would have been better or worse?
Let's see. I mean, maybe he was extremely muscly. We don't know. I mean, those uniforms weren't particularly revealing.
I think there's shots of him in his swimmers. Maybe.
Are there any nude Hitler nudes?
I don't know. No? There must have been one somewhere.
Somewhere, surely. But they don't want us to see that because again, it's so sexy that it would turn a lot of people into Nazis.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They don't want you to know how good.
I know that anytime I see somebody who looks sexy, I immediately adopt their ideology. I mean, is that a fun idea for a...
A sketch, yes.
A sketch?
Yes, yeah. Could be. Yeah. Have you written down alt parenting for a start?
Oh, no, I haven't yet. Okay, alt.
I think that deserves to be on the...
You're right.
The great sketch list of sketching.
Yeah, sketching.
And I think, yes, being radicalized by sexiness. I mean, it is... You know,
no, but if you find something like so that it's like it's not that you don't. Yeah, it's like as soon as you find someone sexy, you adopt their ideology.
Somehow, maybe even before you know what their ideology is it kind of imprinted on you subconsciously?
Yeah, like a baby duck, like a horny baby duck.
Right. Or one of those sort of aversion therapies that they do where they show you images and stuff, then closely show you other images. Maybe that. That's good.
Yeah. It opens up the ideology part of the mind.
The ideology sector of the brain actually has a back door in the sexy sector of the brain
through the sexy gate.
The horn door, and.
Which is not just a place in Lord of the Rings. That's where Frodo is trying to shove his ring.
Yeah, okay.
In the porn version of Lord of the Rings.
Great. He's trying to shove his
That's how dirty that move that perno. Yeah, it's like penetrating rings with rings.
Wow.
Like, because he's trying to put it in a volcano. So somebody's got some big, hot anus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to put his anus in it and wreck it.
Well, if Sauron was really big, and Sauron would be called, like, Hardon or something, I imagine, in this version.
Yeah.
But his Mount Doom was his butthole?
Yeah, and, I think so.
And... And Frodo takes his own butthole to the other butthole.
To Sauron's butthole. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And instead of having the...
Because his butthole was made in Sauron's butthole.
Yeah. Great. And instead of making you invisible when you put it on your finger, it just makes people not want to look at you, which is a kind of invisibility. You know, if you're in public and you put your finger up your butthole, people will look away.
Yeah.
Which is the closest we have come to actual invisibility magic. And you can get away with a lot of stuff while people are looking away. Probably not anything as bad as the thing that you are already doing in public, but...
The question is, does this still work in high security buildings, you know, buildings that you've sort of gained access to and you need to go steal some important codes from? Can you just traverse through the highly secured floors by just
every time you approach a guard or even a security camera?
A single security camera might even itself recoil.
Yeah. So I think you can. Like, they try and train guards not to look away from this kind of stuff, but it's innate. You actually can't. Yeah. You can't train that out of the human brain. So it's like a security defect that is inside the human mind. It's a zero-day exploit.
It's known as finger-in-the-butt invisibility.
I'm really proud of this. Really proud of this. Carly's been recommending a lot of new people listen to the podcast. A lot of our friends, a lot of her friends, she's been recommending.
Oh no.
They listen, and I tell you what, it's going to be a lonely few months, I reckon. It's going
to
be...
It's okay, you know. We need to learn to live without people.
That's right.
I mean, this would be great advice going into more lockdown, not coming out of it, but...
More lockdown. The more locks. Of course. Characters from the Time Traveler.
They've been shot. Yeah. One of the members of the family has been shot. More lockdown.
Yep. So that's a sketch. Write that down. And then we're done. That's everybody. The Morlocks
are the...
Who
are the Morlocks? Are they old money, but not old that much money? Just old sort of...
Morlocks are the mutant underground monsters in The Time Traveler. H.G. Wells is The Time Traveler. He goes into the distant future, and society has divided into the Eli, I think they're called, who live on the surface, and are like the descendants of the wealthy, and they're very beautiful but stupid. And the Morlocks, who are the descendants of the working class, who are very strong and live underground, and who eat the Eli. They come to the surface and eat them. Now, I'm not quite sure what the political statement that makes is.
Mm.
It feels very confusing. Like, what is he trying to suggest that the working class... Like, because it seems like the working class have... a lot of power, but that they're evil.
Mm. Yeah, and that they have better genes?
They're very ugly.
I thought they said they're really beautiful.
No, the rich people are the ones who live on the surface, but that's they're who stupid, I meant. But they're the descendants of the rich. But the working class are the ones who are underground and ugly and evil.
But already just saying that the rich have kind of superior genes is a
nobody kind of a said weird that. Statement. I mean, you said that.
Yeah, I know, but I think isn't that what the interpretation of? I mean, look, I may be getting this wrong, and maybe I'm confronting some of my long held sort of subconscious beliefs, but I guess my interpretation was always that people see beauty as being sort of stronger genes and ugliness as not. But I guess that doesn't really make sense in the context of anything, right?
Well, it's fitness for an environment, but I suppose, yes, you see the symmetry and that sort of thing as being representative of well-functioning genes. Yeah, but then maybe you could be very symmetrical and still extremely ugly, equally hideous on both sides of the line of symmetry.
Well, I mean, I guess there could be, you know, there could be a person, a title even, that could be given out for most symmetrical, hideous person.
Mm. The most, everything's sort of very... Well, does it have to be well-proportioned? Not necessarily. So I'm imagining that the eyes could be very far apart or something, but
and
still
small.
And small. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But perfectly symmetrical.
Yeah.
I mean, we could just do tests on this by just getting pictures of ugly people, you know, people that everybody agrees is ugly, and then yeah. just flipping their face in a mirror or copying it or something to make it symmetrical and see what happens.
But I guess, yeah, but I think you were right in saying beauty is an evolved fitness.
Mm.
Basically, what we see as beauty is what our current mind is looking for.
Yes.
It says, oh, this is what I'm looking for right now. And so they're not better genes, but they're genes that are currently more fit for breeding heaps.
Mm, popular. But then that ignores all the cultural elements of what beauty is, Alistair.
But, I mean, that could be one of the main reasons why all the people on the top are of this H.G. Wells book. Why the people on top, why they are attractive. That it could just be that they have heaps of money. And, I mean, you know, we see beauty also in a way that will help us survive.
Mm.
So maybe they just find them attractive in the same way that we would find like a plate of carbonara pasta really attractive.
Now, is this a thing that could happen in the future? That somebody who's very ugly... Very ugly. Everybody agrees that they're ugly.
Very ugly indeed.
Very ugly indeed. They are also the richest person in the world, right? Say it's Jeff Bezos. I'm not passing judgment on his appearance, but let's say that he feels ugly in himself. He feels that he people don't find him attractive. But what he does with his enormous wealth is begin to manipulate all the media and all the depictions of sexiness and beauty that we are fed every day through advertising and everything. He makes all those representations look like him. So now all the, you know, unless if you want to make it in modeling, it's not your body being certain proportions or your weight or that sort of thing. It's just how much you look like Jeff Bezos. And then, you know, and that is how you get through and succeed. And so you grow over time, everything changes, society changes to shift our perceptions of what beauty is. And then in 50, 100 years, it's looking exactly like Jeff Bezos is the thing that we all find sexy.
Look, it's very possible. I think he could also give money maybe to all the people who look a bit like him.
Right.
So that people who look like him are also tend to be wealthy, which is another positive association with it.
I think that would be very successful.
And then it might cause people in different places to start getting plastic surgery to sort of
look
more like Bezos to get that real dissymmetry, which is what I feel you could say about Jeff Bezos' face?
Well, you could certainly say it about the distribution of wealth in America that benefits Jeff Bezos. It's very asymmetrical.
Yes.
I think this could be a sketch, Alistair. Now, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think that's really good. Rich guy.
Makes everybody, you know, you make, you every time there's a sexy person in an advertisement, they look just, you know, initially just a little bit like Jeff, but over time more and more so, until eventually they're all bald and they've all got that little chin of his, you know, that cute little chin that he has. And those,
that button chin, God, that he's
button
attractive.
Chin. Look, to be honest, I already live in that world. I don't know why I brought this up.
I mean, he could just take over. You know, he took over. You know, Washington Post or whatever, he owns Washington Post. But if he owned, you know, he could buy Vogue or something like that.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
Start doing it.
Maybe he already slight, does. Own
there's
Vogue.
Already slight bits of. You know, slight bits of manipulation of images anyway. You may as well make every face look. But, you know, but then at the same time, to be a supermodel, you kind of do have to, like, have a weird look.
A bit of a weirdness to you.
You got to have a weirdness to
that
you.
That could be the new thing. But you're right. You could manipulate it digitally. You could probably hack into a bunch of computers and nobody would even have to know. But that gradually you are adding elements in and you're slowly morphing all the pictures that go to print over the course of years so that nobody actually notices the change until it's too late and you've got a massive horn dog for the CEO of Amazon all the time.
When you said horn dog, you said you've got a massive horn dog.
Yeah. that's what I talk.
Is that what you call an erection?
That's what I call an erection. Yeah, like a corn dog, but it's
a corn dog.
Yeah. And is a corn dog a thing?
Yeah, corn dog. It's like a Pluto pup, I think.
Yeah. Right. Great.
But I guess if it was, you could make a corn horn dog, and then by battering it and sticking it in oil. Anyway. It's not a good idea.
No? Well, it's not. You're right. Not on almost any level. Don't do that. We don't endorse that.
Hey, when you finish a bottle of wine or something like that,
do
you always hold it up to your eye and look inside?
What, to see if there's any more left in there? Or just to look in there?
Just to look in there. Like, even when you know that there's nothing left.
Yeah. Just have a peek.
When's the last time you looked inside a bottle?
I went through a period of trying to turn wine bottles into drinking glasses. So I looked in a few that way. But other than that, I don't peer down the bottle hole all that much. I don't like to peer into spaces.
You know,
what if a spider jumps out and grabs onto your eyeball?
Yeah, but if it's better to know if there was one in your wine bottle.
Not afterwards. After you've already drunk all the wine. What are you going to do
sure
with that information?
You know, if you had looked in our hot water tank, I think while we were living at the warehouse, you probably would have seen a dead mouse, I think.
In the hot water tank?
Yeah, or just in the water tank. I think, you know how I remember our water used to come out brown?
Oh, yeah, that's right. For quite a long time it came out.
Yeah. And
real brown.
Since then I've seen at least two stories by people who had a similar problem and then called a plumber and then later found out that they had been drinking a mouse.
Now, but I just don't see how that's possible.
I understand.
How does it get in there?
Two stories, Andy. I've heard two stories.
Yeah, they're not real. I mean, are they living on tank water? I can only imagine
that's the thing.
The
other thing is that we eventually stopped having brown water.
Yeah, we drank all the mouse.
Yeah, we drank our way through it.
We drank our problems away. That's one of the few problems that you can solve by drinking.
You actually can drink away.
Yeah, that and dehydration. It's another pretty big problem. Yeah.
That and maybe having too much water in your tank, like high tank pressure.
Yes. Yes, high tank pressure. That's a real issue. Hey, do you think you could get any nutritional value from eating your own teeth?
Yeah. Well, that's what
do you think
I wonder.
There's anything in there?
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely nutrition. I just, for some reason, I just assume that your body, like, when it sees one of its own bits going through the stomach, it goes, nah, he's with us.
Yeah. Just let that go straight through to the butthole?
Yeah, let that go through untouched.
Give that the dignity of being pooped out whole. That's what it would have wanted. Yeah.
No, I mean, there must be some benefit to being a member of the body, or do you think if you chew one of your nails and you swallow it, it just gets digested like everything else and you do get nutrients?
I tell you what, it is nice, one of the nails, getting to see what is going on inside.
Yeah.
You know, like it's sort of like an undercover boss kind of situation. That you know, you're on the outside of this enormous, complicated functioning machine, and then you get to go in and see what it's like on the shop floor, you know, and meet all the people who made all of this possible.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It'd be so cool to be able to just do it with your head.
Yes.
So
yes, it would.
I did do a shusher that was a little bit like this, right? But this idea that if you could have like a bone softener, right?
Mm.
Let's say if it was just a cream and you put it on your head, right? And it just softened your scalp and your jaw and everything like that, just for temporarily, right? And then you could just maybe put like a little headlamp on.
Yeah.
And then just push your head into your chest cavity, so down into your neck, so that you could then look inside.
No, but that wouldn't work, right?
Because, why?
Well, because you would just... are you opening up your chest cavity, or are you just pushing it into the skin, against the skin, and like forcing the skin in?
Yeah,
because then
true.
You're still just going to see skin.
Okay, so
I
what you would have to
a
do?
Virtual
what do you
reality...
You'd have to fold. You'd have to fold the top of your head into your mouth, and then
yes, indeed,
yeah.
Stretch and out and lengthen the eye bit of the head where the eyes are,
and push that all in.
Yeah,
and just have a little light there near your eyes so that you can always see a little bit. Your teeth would be soft.
We're not that far away from being able to put on virtual reality goggles, hold a little controller, and then swallow a tiny submersible thing and drive through your own body, which I think would be amazing. I would actually do that, I think.
Yeah, how small? It would have to be pretty small.
Yeah, I mean, but like, you know, a pee or something like that. Like, if at least in terms of just going through the digestive system, we know that a pee can get through to the butthole unexploded.
I was picturing something about clot-sized going into your bloodstream.
Yeah, okay.
But I guess you can't get into the bloodstream through swallowing.
We made this exactly clot-sized. We think it'll be able to get through the bloodstream without causing any problems. We made it exactly clot-sized.
But Andy, I think that might actually be a good business idea.
Virtual reality go through your own digestive system
thing. Yeah, digestive system thing. Because I think people would want to go through that experience. I mean, you could team up with one of the existing virtual reality things if you feel like it'd be too challenging to sort of design and manufacture.
I don't think we're going to build all our own hardware. Like, I don't see the point in building our own headset. We'll focus on the tiny pea-sized submersible with the cameras.
Yeah.
And the lights. I think lights are going to be really crucial. Being able to illuminate the whole thing in there. Because, a lot of the time when you see one of those colonoscopies or whatever, and you see them a lot, it's very immediate.
When you seek them out the way that I do.
Yeah. It's very immediate. It's very... you only see a very small area, I think, around the probe. Mm. But I love the idea of going into the stomach and being able to see it like a huge cavern. I don't know if that's the reality.
No, maybe. I think it would be like spelunking like that, that you kind of go through some really tight bits. Is that spelunking?
I think it would be cool. Yeah, spelunking, yeah. Great word.
And you go through some really tight bits, but then you don't come out. I think once you enter the stomach, right?
Mm.
You would come out into this huge, it'd be like a big empty hall with just like a bit of water down the bottom. And there'd probably be a waterfall coming from the
This is what
hole.
I want it to look like, absolutely.
Yeah, a big waterfall coming from the upper hole, which I assume is where you fell from. You know, there'd be that bit where you're falling going, whoa, 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 bloop. And then float back to the top, and you'd see the waterfall, and you would see some graffiti, maybe, maybe some evidence of an ancient civilization.
Yeah. I like it. I think the little pea thing, you'd have a little tiny compressed gas canister of some kind in there, and you're able to also, if you get into a tight spot, I think it'd be good to be able to press that and sort of release some gas and kind of inflate the area around you to get a better look at things. Like, I don't want it to be all squished in. I think I'd feel quite claustrophobic.
Sure, yeah. Maybe like a little... Yeah, I guess and just inflate it. I mean, what's that thing that they use? It's just a balloon they use to put in a stent, isn't it? A stent?
Yeah, a bit of a stent type thing. But this is just temporary. I don't see.
Yeah, I think no. I know, but I think the thing that they use to expand the stent is like a temporary balloon type thing.
Okay, great.
So because to get the stent in position, it has to be much thinner.
Mm.
And
right.
Then
yes, of course.
They use a balloon in there to widen it out.
Mm-hmm.
And put it in place and hold the whole area.
Balloon technology. I wonder if when they were developing that, they got in any balloon artist animals.
I think it would be silly not to get, at least not to consult one clown.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, in the movie Armageddon, they send people up to blow up that asteroid.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to send astronauts, but is it Bruce Willis says he's not going without his team of drilling experts?
Yeah.
And they're just good old down-home boyos. And it's the same thing, you can get all the fancy scientists in the world, but you can't go past the good old fashioned know-how of somebody who works with, rubbery little balloons, licking them and twisting them all day, every day, entertaining kids. That's the kind of experience that you can't teach in your fancy schools. And so you get them in. And they'll come up with something revolutionary that, maybe there is an application for a poodle. Yeah, right. I was going to get to the poodle, Al. I was going to take a real fucking long time, but I was going to get there. I was going to bore everybody even more than I already have. And you just drop the word poodle.
Sorry, Andy. I didn't know you had a roadmap.
I had my eyes on the prize.
You had a roadmap and you could see there was a poodle at the end of it. And you're like, don't you ruin my build up. You be quiet for 7 to 11 minutes.
You know me too well. Is that a sketch? Is there anything in that?
Yeah, I've written it down. Balloon wow. Stent developers consulting a clown.
Yeah, great. Incredible. I wonder, you know, I don't know if there's anything else that the clown could bring to it. I think the bit at the end where they just, at the end, they just very quite rudely ask him to leave because after all, he is only a clown. Throw him out onto the street in his big old pants and his nose.
You know what I hate? I hate when people have big pants, but it's actually just kind of like a hula hoop style thing, just widening the top of the pants.
You don't like that?
No, I don't like that.
I think that's funny.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think that's actually one of the funniest things about clowns.
No, I think you got to wear proper big pants.
But that's a kind of... What do you mean? What do you mean? Proper big pants?
I mean, like, you wear, you know, if you're a 32 size waist, remember when we were that, Andy?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I remember there was a time we lived together and we both had the same size pants, like 30 to 32. And that was just a normal thing.
Yeah. Nowadays, I look back on those halcyon days. I still look at size 32 pants on the rack and my eye is drawn to them. And then I have to consciously intervene and say, no, Andy, don't even try those on. Remember, it makes you really sad.
our people are over here now.
Yes.
Our pants are way up at this end.
But what's... I don't understand what you're talking about. You're just talking about people with pants that are too big for them. What's wrong with the hoop? The hoop's funny. It's a silly way to wear your pants.
Yeah. Look, I can't find a way to make the thing that I was talking about work. I mean, I guess I was going to just say they're wearing, like, you know, size 46 pants with a belt.
I think we talked about the pair. I think that actually might be sort of a bit of a Charlie Chaplin Little Tramp kind of look. I feel like his pants were probably too big. But I think we actually talked about big clown pants on a recent episode of the podcast and using them as a parachute to jump out of an aeroplane. I think. Am I right?
Yeah, maybe you're right. I think maybe you're right.
Bells are being rung. Ding dong.
What's that?
I had something I wanted to say before the podcast started, but like everything, you can have the best of intentions, and in those...
Did you have the best of intentions going into this podcast?
No, not at all, actually. I came here... I didn't come here to make friends. I came here to win, and let me tell you, I'm not going home tonight. I didn't come here to go home tonight.
Well, you know, you don't have to go home, but did you know that we have listeners, and... Sometimes some of them send us in three words from a listener. You know, they become Patreon supporters and they can send us in three words to suggest a sketch. And today, I think this is a really old set of three words, but it comes from a very loyal listener. I mean, I'm sure they're all loyal. You guys don't listen to other podcasts, do you?
They took the oath. They took the think tank oath. To the exclusion of all others.
I could even say that this may be one day, because he's asked so much, a future guest on the pod.
My God. I look forward to that.
It's three words from Stuart McCone.
Stuart, thank you for this. In a way, you are a guest on the pod just because you're always in our hearts and we are saying some of your words right now.
Yeah, and some of his family bought him recording equipment.
That's awesome.
For his birthday.
Yes. All right. Well, it feels inevitable.
It feels like it's going to be inevitable. If only we could get organized.
Hmm.
Anyway, so thank you for these words, Stu. Do you want to guess what the first one is, Andy?
Yeah. Rinse.
Rinse?
Rinse. No. Oh.
Reese? Did you say Reese?
No, rinse. Rinse, like you rinse out your clothing.
Like Vince, but with an R.
Yeah, that's right. That's cleared
that
up.
No, it's not that. It's not that. It's four.
For the number four.
For the number four.
Yes. Okay. Great.
And then the second word is bread.
Four bread and salad. Four bread salad.
Oh, good guess. Good guess. I was saying good guest. I think my mind was thinking about Stuart McCone. Who's asked to be on the podcast. And it was just, I had a Freudian slip because I think he's going to be a good guest.
I think you're probably right. But was my guess any good?
No. But no, I mean, it was good in terms of a sketch, I think.
I do think it is a good sketch idea. I think, we allow the crouton as an interloper into a salad, but I would love to see a salad that is entirely made from breads, from four
with maybe
different
a cube
breads.
Of lettuce in there. Little
yes.
cubes of lettuce.
Sure. Great. This is an alternative universe where the dominant salad element is the crouton.
I think four bread salad is a really funny recipe.
But can you imagine that if the sandwich had never been developed as the way that we eat the bread, and instead we ate a bowl of bread, like you chopped up bread into little chunks and strips, julienne some bread, put it into a bowl, and then the spreads then become the salad dressing. So you drizzle peanut butter and Vegemite over the salad. You toss the bread salad like that, and you eat it with a fork.
Andy, I'm already writing it down.
Tossed bread salad.
Four bread salad. I want you to. So his last word was rolls, which I think four different bread rolls you could put into a four bread salad.
Speaking away, we've done it.
Here I am thinking, right? Just see if this works for you. White bread.
Yeah, great. Classic.
Whole meal.
Yeah, I mean, not my favorite. I don't think the flavor of whole meal has ever had anything to recommend it, but go on.
Then we got sort of five seed bread.
Oh, okay. You call that a multigrain?
Multigrain is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And then, fourth one, sourdough.
Of course, it's got to be sourdough. I mean, rye. Rye could be in there, but it feels like.
How about
rye
this?
Is
all
just
right.
a poor man's sourdough.
All right, sourdough, rye.
Yes.
Sandwich.
I see. Now that's not a type of bread. That's a type of slice. That's a format. That's a bread format. But that's bread.
No, I think it's fine. I think it works.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you want to say crusty.
And crusty, yeah, great.
Wait, no, that was the third one, though. And pumpernickel.
Ooh, yeah, I don't mind that sort of heavy weight of the pumpernickel. In the ecosystem of breads, the pumpernickel feels like a real healthy bread.
Now it's a salad.
Yeah.
And I guess, the pumpernickel's like the olives of the salad.
I'm going to pitch this sketch and try and get it up on our Christmas in December stupid old studio special.
It's
because
four bread salad.
Four bread salad is really tickling me.
Well, we could brought a bunch of dishes to this thing.
That's right. Bread salad and then drizzling on the Vegemite. You'd have to thin the Vegemite and make it quite runny, which is really...
You microwave some butter.
Yeah. You mix that in with some Vegemite.
And then you mix in a globule of Vegemite in there.
Yeah.
Like that, you put it in a little squirty bottle.
It feels disgusting instinctively, but intellectually, you can't argue with it.
Yeah. And imagine
and so
this,
it's a salad for the intellect, I think, the bread salad.
Imagine bread like that. Just a bit of bread like that that's been, from different rolls and things like that, like we just discussed. But they're kind of like, maybe they're all torn apart a little bit and then, lightly roasted in the under the grill. Just so that they get a bit crispy. And then you wrap them in like a pita bread. And you have them. You have them like a kebab or like a shawarma.
Yeah, great.
I mean, this could be a whole series of vegetarian meals.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a bread restaurant.
It's just a bread restaurant.
Yeah, it's called bread.
Well, bakeries don't really tend to cross the breads.
Bakeries don't tend to refer to themselves as a bread restaurant, but I wish they did. I went to the takeaway bread restaurant. You mean the bakery? No, no.
Takeaway bread restaurant.
It's quite confronting having one of the three words be the word for. It's really disorienting and throwing me off. And I think you might be fucking with us. That's all I'm saying. It's a high level fuck, but
it's a high level fuck. Is that what you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Such a high level fuck.
You know, like
that's actually what I've heard Stu called. sorry, I love you, Stu. Feels like I don't know Stu that well, right? I only know him from Twitter. But I assume that we would give each other shit like that.
Yeah, well, you do.
Yeah.
So it's just a question of whether he gives it back.
I think he does.
What is four bread rolls? Like, what can we do with that? Just the suggestion, four bread rolls. I mean, I don't think we need to force it and come up with anything else because I'm happy with four bread salad. But it's a really, you know, it's an interesting suggestion in that it doesn't really, in a way, suggest anything. Like, it's...
Yeah. But what about it's a group of people who start making babies, but with four people.
Like getting a bun in the oven, but a four-way baby bun. A new kind of parent arrangement.
We find a new way, like it's a bit of pipe or something like that. It's like a two-way.
Yeah, it's probably all it is.
It's a bit of pipe that we find, and it's like, it's just a new valve or a new configuration of pipes.
Yeah.
We figure out a way of mixing two eggs and two bits of sperm.
Mm.
You know, like, imagine if there was just a way, like, you know, when, you know, I think how the egg, there's something to do with, like, it kind of allows a sperm in. There is a mode that it goes in and then it locks down.
Mm. Yep.
What if there's something in that moment where it can also allow in the other egg?
I think... I don't think it's ever been tested. I don't think anyone's ever fired eggs at eggs just to see what happens. And I don't think it's that crazy.
Yeah. And maybe with this bit of pipe, like maybe it could be something a plumber discovered.
It's one of those medical breakthroughs that is basically plumbing.
Yeah. And
there must be some.
And it's just a guy working in his workshop, in his garage, you know, and he makes this kind of bit of pipe. It's like
it's a four-way bit of pipe, and you've got to variously put it up yourself and put yourself into the openings, and then if you time everything right, the eggs migrate down to the center at the exact time that the sperm strikes like two colliding beams, particle beams in a particle accelerator, and the pressure of the sperm creates a kind of fusion, like the pressure that, you know, fuses atoms in the sun, and the two eggs are forced together by these spermal waves, and it forms a new double baby, I guess, right? With twice as much genetic material as is necessary. And it's good to have some spare.
Because it doesn't help that much, does it? But... you know, you get to pick from four sets of stats.
Stats.
You know, so, you know, because you got the stats from each one, four bloodlines.
The stats. Right? What are your stats?
And to be the dominant gene, when you've had to dominate three other sets of genes rather than just one other.
Yep.
You know, knowing that other two sets of genes could gang up on you.
Yep. You've come through. To be
You've
top
really
of that
come
heap.
Through, and so you're going to have a real tough MF, Andy.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting device and future for all of us. Hey, everybody. Okay, so now this is just Andy, because what you don't know, you know, you're probably shocked. Where did Al go? What's going on? Is everything okay? Everyone's fine. Everything's okay. But what you don't know is that before the podcast, the recording was delayed for a long time because neither of Alistair's computers were working. And then he recorded directly onto his Zoom recording device. But then, at the point where you just got up to in the podcast, his device ran out of batteries. And we didn't realise, as we continued to record another good 10 minutes of absolutely rock-solid, rip-hard material. And it, unfortunately, it will never hear the light of day. The beautiful sound of the light of day will never fall upon its ears or yours. And so now what I will do is I'll just take you through the sketch ideas that we came up with, and I'll sign off, and we'll leave it at that. So this is, and Alistair's not able to record anymore right now because he doesn't have any more batteries for his device. It's a long and very sad but incredibly true story. So here we go. The sketches we came up with today were Long Division Scam, which is possibly a Plandemic-style documentary about how teachers don't want you to know the easy way of doing division. Alt Parenting, in which I get my kids to do what the things that they don't want to do by telling them that the elites don't want them to do them. Sexiness causes you to adopt somebody's ideology. Ah, yes. Finger in the butt invisibility. Classic. And indivisibility. A rich person makes everybody think that they are the definition of beauty via manipulation of the culture, the zeitgeist, and the collective psyche. Is this how I normally talk? I forget. A pea-sized camera, virtual reality experience, being able to go through your own digestive system. The stent, the balloon stent, balloon animal artist, animal person. I was thinking that maybe a way in which you could demonstrate that is you could have one of the doctors working on the stent via some remote camera inside the chest of a still living patient, and you see them manipulating, inflating the stent with their little catheter probe inside the vein, and then you see them manipulating the hands of their tiny, tiny robot, and they tie it into a balloon animal, maybe a poodle. We have the four, of course, the four bread salad, which I hope you got to hear that bit, and the takeaway bread restaurant. And of course, you may have heard this bit, which is four people being able to give birth to a baby via some pregnancy toy based around pipes, the manipulation of pipes, the appropriate moment of release for all concerned. Anyway, those are the sketches that we came up with today. I'm going to do a little song all by myself. Do a song by myself. You know, I think it's even worse when Al isn't here. I shouldn't say even worse. I shouldn't sound surprised at all when I say that. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We really do appreciate it. I'm Stupid Old Andy on Twitter. He's at Alistair TB. You can support us on Patreon, and so many of you do, and we love that so much about you. That's a great thing. Thank you for everybody who does that, and thank you for everybody who doesn't do that. You can review us on iTunes. We've been getting a lot of people sharing and informing people about the podcast recently. Some new people jumping on board, so good on ya, and thanks for chucking us a listen down the old ear canal, straight into those oral bones that are so small, the stirrup. Of course, the hammer. There's another one. I think there's a curly one. It's great to be stimulating all of those oral sensory components. And you should listen to Do Go On. I'm going to put this in the show notes, but I was on the recent episode of Do Go On talking about Matthew Brady, Tasmanian bushranger, and I had a lot of fun, and they were very kind to have me on the program. And you can download Magma still if you want at sospresents.com. And I have it on good authority. I feel like I can speak on behalf of both of us, both myself and Alistair, when I say that we love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.